on to the playoffs for the Bills. We know we've known they're going and would be at home. Two seed locked in. New England first, and we'll see what that looks like. We'll talk to Eric Wood here on the Wester Hotline about that and more. It is Football Monday on WGR. I'm Mike Shope, and Bulldog is off today. Eric, I have a question for you that might be the hardest question you've ever been asked by anyone. You ready?
All right, let's hear it. I'm a little nervous.
If anybody can answer this question, I think it's you. What's holding? Okay, so you're already backpedaling. Like, I would love it. I think maybe fans would like it, Eric, if you, as a longtime offensive lineman in the league, could help us, or at least me, know what I'm watching here when it comes to holding. Spencer Brown earlier in this game, you know, he gets his arm in a certain position. It looks like holding. It really isn't. Guy falls. You have leverage. You have just sometimes when, like that example, maybe you have an offensive lineman looks like he's gotten maybe an unfair advantage on the play. The defensive guy falls, but it's not really holding. I don't know. Do you know when you see it? Like, is it easy for you to sort of tell the difference with holding, like whether it's a good call or bad?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, part of it to me is are you at the point of attack? You know, did it affect the play? Because ultimately you could call a penalty for a number of things on every single play. I mean, you talk about illegal contact on a passing play.
Yeah.
You know, any contact 5 yards down the field by a defender is considered illegal contact on a pass play. You could call that over and over and over throughout a game. And so, you know, did it truly affect the play? That'd be one thing. And then, you know, you got to understand is what you're doing, and this kind of goes on the same line, you know, is it affecting the result of what the defender is trying to do? Like, just because a guy has his hand outside doesn't mean that's a hold. Just because a guy has a hand of someone's jersey doesn't mean that a hold. Yes, it's a lot easier to maybe point out, maybe with a teleprompter or something, you know, and give a full explanation that way. But, you know, and I understand these refs have a tough job. The thing that ticks me off nowadays is anytime anybody goes to the ground, they're looking to throw a flag on an offensive lineman for holding, to where it kind of takes some of the physicality out of the position. You know, we used to pride ourselves on pancakes and track them throughout the year. Well, we quit doing that towards the end of my career because it just led to too many holding calls. When you put someone down, it increases the likelihood of getting a holding call. So we didn't, you know, punish people for doing it. And sometimes you know, have an awesome block and don't get flagged for it. And then there's other times where you could have held him up, but you planted him on the back of his head. The ball carrier goes by you. Must have been holding. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of what you're saying is, especially when you rope in the illegal contact stuff, I literally tweeted that yesterday, like anytime you want it, you can have it. You're talking so much here about appearances. I'm a defensive player. Wouldn't there be defensive linemen, maybe even you'd be able to name from your playing days, who you think maybe had a reputation for being able to draw calls? I'm going down. I'm going super low this time. I might flail a little bit. I'm due for one. We're due for one based on how officials have been calling this game. None of that really sounds like what the rules probably say.
No, the Patriots were coached to do this, and they play a two-game, you know, with – especially when I first got in the league, they played with a bunch of two-gappers. So they would, you know, get into your chest. They're trying to hold off and not let you get up to the backers on a double team. And those guys that are trying to eat up the double team, the ball goes by. They flail their arm back. A lot of times they go down on the ground without even you necessarily wanting them to, and they get a call half the time. And, you know, a defensive end gets out-leveraged on the edge, and he's not doing his job. Well, if he tries to then cross back across that tight end or tackle, he's likely going to get planted. Well, then he just flails and makes it look like a big hold. And then there are holding calls. There are times where you get beat on a play and maybe you get away with it, but I'm also not willing to let a running back get smashed in the backfield or a guy take a free shot at the quarterback.
So bottom line here, if we can get to a bottom line, Eric, is can it be better? You know how frustrating it is watching games. This is also true of defensive secondary penalties, like you brought up, and a lot, pass interference included, a lot of things in the league where They're trying to. They get criticized for calling too many penalties, even if they're accurate. We don't want to have whatever the number is in a given game. Yesterday came close. Yesterday, so it's both, as an aside, and both Bills-Jets games this year had a lot of flags, but look at how these teams play against each other. I mean, shouldn't they have had a lot of flags? You know, you had fights here. But anyway, is it reasonable to think that the job should be done better?
Yes, I think for the most part they call too many holding calls inside, and that's just, or like too many, you know, just kind of ticky-tack holding calls that, you know, these aren't player safety calls. This isn't hurting the game. But what it does hurt is when you have the chest pass touchdown by Josh Allen and you have a phantom holding call on David Edwards, you wipe out one of the highlights of the season. And so, yes, in my opinion, the holding calls could definitely be better. And, you know, they've gotten to the point where they're calling them so often on stuff that's not necessarily a hold, or it's on the backside of a play. It didn't even affect anything, and it didn't, you know, no one was at risk of an injury. I just don't see the point in it.
Those are the ones that maybe we might be starting to see the league pick up, because the official can't always be aware of where the ball is going, right? If he's focused on a one-on-one matchup up front and it ends up being, what you've said a few times here, inconsequential to the play, those are the ones we want to just sort of not worry about. And I wonder if that's where the space ref, or whatever you call him, would be to come into play.
No, that's a good point. And that would help. It's how do we keep a flow to this football game? You mentioned these Jets-Bills matchups. The first one, I believe there was 32 thrown flags in the game, 22 accepted penalties. Yesterday was just higher than, I believe, that 22 accepted penalties on the game. So, I mean, it's just, you know, there's going to be enough chippiness. There's going to be some pre-snap stuff both ways. You don't necessarily need to add on these, hey, there was illegal contact where a guy doesn't go to the ground and he continues running his route. It's like, eh.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I don't really see the point there.
One of the more annoying things that you see in a game is illegal contact on 3rd and 17, where, you know, whatever. Make it not an automatic first down, perhaps, someday. Well, all of this, you know, gets me to Alec Anderson. The way this game started yesterday, Eric, he was pretty fired up. Throws a punch on that, looked like, anyway, that one sequence where a different Bills lineman got a personal foul penalty. What was it here? Like, you had a couple of times where the coaches looked like they were trying to calm him down. Maybe the Jets, after the way the game started, were trying to bait him.
Yeah, that could happen in a game. You know, these two, I'll say, fronts, and especially the Bills defensive line and the Bills O-line, they do not like each other. Well, Alec Anderson, Deion Dawkins, Spencer Brown, they're your tone setters. Well, Alec Anderson's only going to get, you know, maybe 12-ish plays a game, you know, as that sixth offensive lineman. Well, he comes in, he's got a lot of energy, and he's looking to set the tone. And, yeah, I mean, you don't want to be throwing punches, you know, kind of went down on top of him. You know, a lot of times you want to control that. But, you know, you got a game where you're locked into the playoffs. You're playing for the 2-seed, but you're a double-digit favorite. Now, I like seeing guys that come in with that type of intensity. Now, David Edwards retaliates when they go back after him, and it hurts the Bills offensively. That's no good. But, man, I like the way this offensive line plays football. They have some toughness up there. They play with some attitude.
How about Anderson and the role he plays, not just his attitude, but as a sixth lineman? It's been a big part. Bulldog often brings this up when you're on. It's been a big part of their offense this year. Knox stays on the field, which I did expect this year to happen. Kincaid working in more as like a receiver. And then Anderson, I didn't think about him at all before the season started, but... And they've stayed so healthy, too. Like, they have this real luxury with him, and it seems like it's a big part of their offensive identity.
It is. It brings some physicality when you bring in a guy that's 310 pounds at the tight end position, and, you know, they put him in motion. You know, they will trap him across the formation. He's got some good athletic ability at 310, but He also brings an attitude and intensity that I mentioned before. The Bills run 6-0 lineman sets more than anybody in the entire NFL for a majority of the season. They average the most yards per play of any team. And so to have the most plays and averaging the most yards per play, you're getting great production out of that package. And so, it's just another thing, too. Here's a couple good things about running 6-0 linemen. It's pretty easy for the offense to say, hey, we're going to run this play, whether it's 13 personnel, we have three tight ends out there, or if we have 6-0 linemen and two tight ends, Alec, you're in this position now. Well, what it does is it gives the defense of the other week they have for. Oh, they have 6-0 linemen set. They like the in these different ways. They also do hard play action, and it's really hard to get anyone home when you have 6-0 linemen on the field. And so it's just another kind of grouping that the defense has to spend time on. And then you're also getting a young guy in Alec Anderson a lot of playing time to where if he has to fill in because of injury at any point, you feel pretty comfortable with him out there because he's got a lot of game action.
Mm-hmm. Eric Wood on the Wester Hotline. I'm Mike Schoep. Bulldog is off today, Football Monday, on WGR, the Bills over the Jets, 40-14. Quick thought on the Jets here, Eric. I mean, how much worse can it get with all the, nice word for it, drama with that team and just another beat down here? I wonder, too, of the three teams in the AFC East, other than the Bills, each of them has probably had it with Buffalo's dominance here at this point over the last 5 years. I would think maybe least of all New England because of all the success they had before. Dolphins and Jets are different. Dolphins have gotten close a lot, and there would be frustration from that. The Jets are just nowhere, and they make the transition from losing almost every one of those years like the Bills did to Brady, and then now they have this reality. The Rodgers experiment has been a complete failure. I don't know. Is there anything I'm leaving out here?
Likely, but yes, no. They're a disaster right now, and you know the investments that they made to add to that roster that seemed to have a great core. You know, when you looked at some of their younger draft picks and pieces with Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed and Quinnen Williams and these guys that you know have star power in this league. But then you bring in all these shiny objects and you completely neglect your offensive line or you don't kind of give it the attention it needs. So it holds you back. You put all this money into a 40-year quarterback. And, yes, he had won an MVP just prior. And Tom Brady set the he's the passing leader in the NFL at 44 years old and won a Super Bowl. So, okay, maybe this works. But, you know, you're making mistakes. And it seemed like you had a good nucleus and you needed just a quarterback and you try to draft Wilson, number two overall, which failed. And I'm no draft expert, but I didn't love that pick and I didn't love him coming out of college. And then you say, okay, well, we have this great roster. Let's just bring in Aaron Rodgers and all of his buddies at the skill position players. But we're going to bring in a 40-plus year aged quarterback and give him no protection up front. I mean, that safety yesterday, one, it was a bad play call because you only had five blockers on the play. So when you have three guys on both sides of the ball, they're trying to sort it out. That's why the tackle looks like he's not even setting forward towards the defensive end. I mean, to me, that's more of a play call issue than anything. And maybe it's on Rodgers to get out of it. But, no, they're a dumpster fire right now. And, I mean, they can't get out of their own way either. You know, they come out yesterday with that boombox playing Gangster's Paradise. Like, I get it. You're trying to have fun, and you're eliminated from the playoffs, and you're trying to, you know, just get your guys to loosen up a little bit, go out and, you know, evaluate some talent and go try and screw the Bills in their own stadium. But, I mean,
you better win.
Bad look.
You better win, right? At any level of sports, any sport, you want to show a cocky side here, you better win. You better be able to back it up. No matter what level of sports you ever achieved, that's been the same. you can't.
Absolutely.
Right? You walk the walk, I think, is the, you know, half the expression. Okay. Is this week ahead pretty self-explanatory? Game doesn't matter. Allen starts, keeps the streak alive, leaves. 5-10 other, maybe older, banged up players sit. I mean, that's kind of what I almost am assuming.
Yeah, that's what I would assume as well. And, you know, I don't know that they're – you say keep Josh's streak alive, and maybe they do that. But, you know, if you put Josh down for this week, then you could potentially have another guy to give another vet some rest. So, but, you know, Josh could be your backup quarterback, and if something were to happen to Trubisky, you could just have him handed off. So, you know, it doesn't make that big of a difference there. But, no, in my opinion, it's pretty self-explanatory. A lot of veterans and a lot of guys are going to get a much-needed physical break, but then also, you know, just Josh and a few others, them a mental break. You know, them to grind on a game plan all week and, you know, go through hours of film work. You know, you go into this week and you get to take your foot off the gas a little bit and recharge and hopefully go make a run after it.
Bill's still a 2.5-point favorite at BetMGM, maybe because New England gets the number one overall pick if it loses. So not the same situation, of course, but maybe also incentivized to do less than the utmost preparation or what have you.
If I'm New England right now and I'm sitting on the one pick, but I feel really good about my quarterback and I feel like they should. I mean, they got a pretty good situation to be in right now where they also have the most salary cap money at this point heading into the offseason. Like, you should be able to move that number one pick for multiple extra high draft picks. It seems like they would be in a great situation right now, but we've said that about a lot of organizations in the past, and
it doesn't
quite work out.
The thing that has to happen for that, to capitalize on that, is there has to be probably a quarterback that everybody wants. There has to be – I mean, Carolina paid up heavily to get to Bryce Young, so maybe you just need somebody the caliber of Bryce Young. But I'm not sure we have that this year, so there are better years than others to get the number one pick. And this is supposed to be a year where defense is strong and running back, if you want, not number one, I would think, but not made to order when it comes to QB. And like you said, the Patriots have a guy. You think so, too. Everybody seems to think May is good.
What excites me about him is, no, but, and I'm not saying Josh Allen, but, you know, Drake May makes mistakes. He's got some lowlights, but he's got some highlights. He's got some great throws down the field. He's got some athletic plays. He can avoid pressure in the pocket. Like, you know, you look at his stats and they're not great, but the highlights are there. So you see what his ceiling could be, and then it's over time, can you refine the game enough and, you know, have a good enough OC around you, some talented players, an offensive line that's not awful. If all that comes together, I have confidence that he can be a good player in this league.
Thank you. Just in, Sean McDermott speaking, says Allen will start, that the streak is important, and then he'll be off quickly. So I think we're on that. How much of an advantage is all of this for them? I mean, it's not the bye week like the Chiefs. The Chiefs basically get 2 weeks of this. One, of course, you don't play at all. But is it big?
I think so. And I think, you know, for minute. You know, they had two defensive starters injured in week 18 at Miami last year, and then you lose two more the following week against Pittsburgh, and which that really hurt you in that Kansas City game. So to play a week this week where at least kind of your top-end players, you know, more veteran guys don't have to go out there, that could be valuable just from a non-injury risk. And you talk about the mental recharge, and the one thing you'd be worried about is, you know, them not being sharp, especially, you know, you don't feel great about the New England game offensively, but then you play against the Jets and, you know, in the third quarter, you're up 40-0 and you feel like, okay, we've done what we need to do in the regular season. We couldn't get the one seed. We got the two. We feel pretty good with where we're at right now. Now we can kind of mail it in and get ready for Denver, Cincinnati, or
Miami.
You're right.
I'll just sort of tee this up for you in case you want to swing at it. I'm sure a lot of fans would like to hear you answer this a certain way. It's going to be 25 days between Christmas, when Kansas City won in Pittsburgh to clinch the one, and, or give or take one day, depending on the schedule, their divisional round game. Could that be too much?
It could. I mean, you look at how teams, you know, start in the you know, in the early on in the season that don't get a lot of work in the preseason. They have a lot of veteran players over there. You know, I think it works better than having to go and play 7 days after an emotional win the week before to get into the playoffs or to clinch, you know, whatever seed you needed. But yeah, I mean, it sure could be too much when you just talk about, you know, just time under task and, you know, away from the game and the speed of the game, and the speed of the game goes up in the playoffs, even from the regular season, and, you know, how that's going to feel when you get back out there. But they have so many guys that have been in these moments before that I'm sure they'll be used to it. And you had a pretty, you know, fairly dinged up Patrick Mahomes that should now be able to get healthy. And they seem to be getting healthier in a lot of areas on the team. Chris Jones was dinged up. And so, you know, those guys are going to get some rest.
Right. One more for you, Eric. So you mentioned the playoff possibilities for the Bills in week one, the three teams. It's about 85%, 5 out of 6 scenarios, Denver would be the team. They're a 10-point favorite against the Chiefs, which tells you just what the bettors think the Chiefs are going to roll out for this game. Do you have a thought on the Broncos? They're the last team to beat the Bills here in the regular season. That's Russell Wilson, and maybe very different. I've kind of liked Knicks. I was impressed on Saturday, if you got to see it, when they came back late to tie Cincinnati before the overtime loss. I mean, they were right there with the Bengals. So how good are they for you?
They have a good defense. And then, you know, Bo Nix has impressed me at times this year, especially starting off slow and then, you know, working into the season and getting better and actually making a run for a while at offensive player or rookie offensive player of the year. I think Jaden Daniels has of lately has completely solidified that. But of those three teams, I would likely take Denver as my choice. And I said this on One Bills Live earlier, and I'll try and make it quick for those that have heard it twice. But, you know, the movie afterwards, the perfect docu-series on a Bills playoff run, you beat Burrow at home, then you beat Lamar at home, and Josh is the MVP, and we rub it in their face why, and then you go to Kansas City and beat them at their place, then you go win the Super Bowl, and you, like, exercise all your demons. And but I said, give me Denver in the first round at home. I don't even love Mike McDaniel coming up here after what he was able to script up with Skylar Thompson at quarterback a couple years ago in the snow in the playoffs, so yeah. Give me Denver, and then as soon as Baltimore or Kansas City are willing to lose, even if it's just us, I'll take it.
Yeah, Miami feels, Bulldog has said this, a little bit like they're just kind of due for one of these. There have been close games, but again, Denver win, and it's the Broncos, and they're a big favorite here against the Chiefs. Eric, thank you. Happy New Year. What do you do for New Year?
Yeah, Happy New Year to you as well. I think we're just going to hang out at home and maybe have another couple of their kids over. And I don't know, a Tuesday night after being in Buffalo all weekend, you know, I don't really want to leave the kids again. So I think we're just going to hang out. I got my fantasy football championship tonight, and my team's in the barn with a 14-point league in a half PPR league.
Let's go.
And all they have left is Jahmyr Gibbs tonight, which I don't love.
Oh, wow. I was wondering who you were going to say. He's the worst one you could have said, I think, in this game.
Yeah, 100%, I agree.
Maybe they take him out. They don't need it. Maybe you can hope for that. Keep him healthy.
I was watching NFL Live earlier. His anytime touchdown score is like plus 350. I'm like, wait.
Whoa, wow, really?
Montgomery's out. How is that the case?
He should be, I would think, the number one guy, but sometimes...
He was number one, but the number one was plus 350.
I got minus 450, Eric.
Wow. Maybe I saw minus 350.
Maybe, yeah. Anytime, BetMGM, minus 450. That is huge. Good luck. Good luck.
Yep.
Thanks for your time, Eric. Talk to you next week.
Absolutely. You too.
Eric Wood on the West Her Hotline, minus 450 anytime touchdown. Don't bet it. I mean, that's just like kind of telling you. It's close to a lock. Eric's appearances on WGR are brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. And by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com. Want to talk Broncos, Patriots, Jets, AFC playoff picture? Here for all of it. It's Football Monday. I'm Mike Shope, and this is WGR.
I mean, it speaks to the staff that we've got here, the guys that we've got in this locker room, how this team's put together, the culture that we have. We didn't really pay attention to the preseason notions, but we heard them and we saw them and we knew what people were saying, but had no effect on us. We just came in to training camp and tried to work as hard as we could. And there's another stat I think that we tied today was the most touchdowns caught by different receivers or different players. I believe we got 13 and we got another week to try to get one more. So that's a stat too that we talk about a lot. Everybody eats in this offense and it's a mantra that we've had. And I think that's a testament to that.
It is 13. It includes Allen for taking that Amari Cooper lateral to the end zone after a pass to Cooper in the game against San Francisco. 13 different players have at least one touchdown catch, and none more than five. And that's Hollins. And I'm not the first one to say it, but think about if you were with us all summer. All right, here's what's going to happen. Everybody eats. I almost hate to say it now. It's so played out. But everybody eats, and the Bills run away with the AFC East, fifth year in a row. And their leading receiver for touchdowns is Mac Hollins. How many does he have? I don't know. Maybe it's five. But the idea that they could be this good and have Hollins lead them in touchdown catches... I mean, they're second in the league in points, and yet five is the most. It surprises me, like Hollins having the role he's had. It's 26 catches. You know, that's not even two per game. But five touchdowns is surprising. The rest of it is exactly what they promised us. And you haven't had Kincaid pop. And Shakir, for all his value, is not a touchdown maker. He's got four for the season. It isn't even James Cook, right? Like, who would have been your guess to lead them in touchdowns? You could have said Cook pretty easily, like six maybe. But of the running backs, Ty Johnson has more receiving touchdowns than Cook with three. Cook has two. Ray Davis has two. So you have this game where there's nothing on the line. If this is a record you care about, I don't think it should be too hard to find somebody else up from the practice squad. It can't be Tyrell Shavers now because he got on the board. But someone else that's been hanging around, a lineman maybe, a little flea flicker to Trubisky or something. That's a lot for a meaningless Week 18 game. Maybe it's Gilliam. Maybe that should be the guy. He's on this list, you know, 14 games played, no touchdown catches. 803-0550 for your calls. I'm Mike Shope. Thanks for listening. Everything's open here. The MVP stuff, the resting strategy. We've heard Allen will play just like I thought. I mean, he'll play a little bit. Maybe that's one series. Maybe it's even one play to keep that streak alive. So that'll happen. Playoff opponents. I'm eager for some Broncos takes if you happen to be someone who has that in your bag. I feel like I said it myself and then Eric said it. I think this is the common sentiment that Denver is just okay, and that's the kind of team you should want in a playoff game, which it is how I feel, but that alone is a little bit unsettling when you know just how unpredictable it all can be. I mean, you're going to want to play someone more than someone else. That's how it's going to be. The Bengals just seem like so obviously the scary one, but they still can't really stop anybody, and it's not like they're winning games easily or anything like that. They got in a big hole this year. They probably should have a better record, but they lost the close ones and now they need help. And Denver is just sort of the opposite of that. They just played on Saturday to an overtime game in Cincinnati. So maybe it's wrong to think, what do the power rankings look like? Well, I know Cincinnati has done better than Denver has, at least lately. And maybe it's a little bit of a trap to think that the Broncos are the easier mark there. And then Miami, I guess, is Tua even healthy? Doesn't play yesterday, may not play this week either. 803-0550 for your thoughts on that. By the way, earlier I said how the Bills won the toss and took the ball. I believe that is what was said on CBS. Pro Football Reference in its play-by-play says the Jets won the toss and deferred. So I wanted to get that in in case you're thinking that I made a mistake there. I maybe did, but I was just taking that from what CBS said, unless I misheard it. Eric talking about Bo Nix, speaking of the Broncos, and how he's impressed. I think that's, you know, that's certainly fair. It's also based on expectations, right? Like if, this doesn't even really work. If Caleb Williams had had Bo Nix's season, and the Bears are a wild card, or probably a wild card, and, you know, the numbers are fine, you know, fairly modest, not off the charts, but fine. Are people that impressed with Caleb Williams if that had happened? I think there would still be some sort of a mixed bag on what he looks like as a rookie. That has not happened. He gets sacked constantly, and they cannot complete even a 10-yard pass. So that looks pretty bad. And we'll see if they can fix that before it's too late and they end up wasting one of the best college quarterback prospects ever in Caleb Williams. Nix, I mean, he's the sixth quarterback picked. It's the not even the middle of the first round, right? Whatever it is, like 12 maybe, thereabouts. And mostly people mocked him for it because most analysts, I would say, maybe somebody like Chris Trapasso or somebody else that pays closer attention to the chatter would say it wasn't this maybe pronounced. But for me, it was like nobody thought he was a first-round pick talent. And he's been fine. He's been good. They're going to go to the playoffs probably in his first year with him having played from the first snap of the season. So that's a great job. It might say something about the experience, the age of the player, which this came up on my podcast this morning at ADP Chasing, how it was always kind of seen as a strike against, it still maybe is, when the player is older. You just, you know, not as long of a, just simple logic, as long of a career ahead of them if they start at an older place, older age. And the fact that the player didn't, you know, immediately blow you away in college as a prospect makes you want to have a more modest analysis of him. You'd rather have somebody that did, like Williams. But Nix and also Jaden Daniels were players that it took a while. They ended up transferring and just were not off the charts kind of talent. I mean, Daniels got to a point where he won the Heisman Trophy and Nix, his team went far. Different players. But I think expectations are a key piece in terms of that analysis when it comes to his being impressive, because it looked like he was overdrafted, and instead, he's got them likely to make the playoffs. They haven't done it yet. They have to beat Kansas City, which nobody but the Bills have done. Of course, Kansas City expected to sit Patrick Mahomes and other key players. The expectation of that happening is so likely that Denver is favored by 10 against the 15-1 Chiefs on Sunday. And is that a late game? I don't even know. Oh, look. I'm not sure if it's Sunday. I'm not sure if it's 1 or 425. Let's go to Rick here. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how you doing, guys, doing today?
I'm fine, thank you.
I just want to address the Buffalo defense. It seems like when they have a stop, like 3rd and 1, 4th and 1, they rise to the occasion. But they scare the heck out of me during the game when it just seems like the Reds, you know, parting of the Red Sea, and a guy will open up and get 15 yards, downfield, one of the running backs. It seems like to me for the playoffs, they got to find a way of tightening that up.
Not a big concern of mine. I'm always the same with this. We might have even had the conversation in the past. I'd rather be, great if you can be both, I'd much rather be tight against the pass, and that's what makes the Bills so hard to beat, because they are. The times this year when, well, the recent games, they beat the Lions, but the Ram game was when they couldn't be stopped through the air. Having been down a couple of safeties, you're down Douglas, and it took its toll. But just like a lot of the top teams in the NFL, go ahead and run it. And you said something important at the beginning, which is they have been good, I think. I'd guess that in short yardage plays. Like yesterday, early in the Jet game with Braylon Allen's run, they've come up with those big stops. It's one thing to do it against the Jets, though. Like, when I don't know if it's Denver either, but the hard part of all this is that it looks like the Bills will have to beat the Ravens and the Chiefs just to make it. It's supposed to be hard, and it should be hard, but that's what not getting to that one cost them. Wasn't much they could do. 13-3, wasn't much they could do. 803-0550, thank you, Rick. Sal coming up at 5. This is Mike Shope on WGR. Tough weekend for the Seahawks. After getting a win in Chicago on Thursday night to stay alive in the NFC West, the Rams, not, I would say, impressively, but squeeze out the win Saturday night over Arizona, 13-9. But they're still not clinched unless, was it 3.5 or originally maybe 4.5 or more out of 7 teams? There were a list of teams, the Bills were on it, that had their results this weekend were going to determine whether the Rams had clinched because of the strength of victory category. Teams that the Rams beat that Seattle didn't. The Bills on them on the list. The Vikings were on the list. Bills win. Vikings win. Cincinnati was on the list. They won. Might not just be teams that the Rams beat, but some kind of formula. And then it came down to, I think, Atlanta-Washington was also, maybe Washington winning was what the Rams needed. Only kind of sure I'm right about that. And Washington wins the game in overtime. Whatever it was really close. Like one result, I believe, would have flipped that and made this Sunday's Seahawks-Rams game relevant, I believe. But that didn't happen. So they play, it's meaningless, mostly. There's the seeding element in the NFC. We haven't talked much about that. You know, you know why? Because it's the NFC. But the Rams are the 3, and right now Tampa Bay is the 4. And I believe that I just read this, that if the Bucs won it's their game and the Rams lost their game, that would flip 3 and 4, which does not seem insignificant, like it might in the AFC. Your 5 and your 6 in the AFC probably are the Steelers and the Chargers. Who would you rather play? I think it's close. Steelers are down kind of bad lately. Chargers are just never a team people trust in the playoffs. I think it's close. In the NFC, the difference between the first round opponents for the 3 and the 4 would be either Washington or Green Bay. Not easy. Or the Minnesota-Detroit loser. So if Tampa Bay ends up the 4, or the Rams do, they would play the loser of the Sunday night game. Which, by the way, how great is that? The NFL got lucky this year with the Sunday night. Vikings and Lions, a combined 27-4. Lions play tonight first. It turns out that tonight's game doesn't mean anything for Detroit. Win it or lose it, they get the 1 only if they... Well, maybe I don't know about a tie. I guess they would probably make it on a tie too, but have to beat Minnesota otherwise next Sunday night. So the Rams in that particular one might want to play to avoid having to play maybe the Lions in the first round. I could respect that. That'll be a close one to talk about. With the Bills, there really isn't anything close to talk about. And we've already had Sean McDermott today say what the plan is for Allen and the starters on Sunday in New England, and it's exactly what we thought. And I think maybe everybody would advocate for. Allen barely plays, but he does. And other older guys, injured guys. I wonder if Cook came up. I want to ask Sal about that because he's interesting for me on this. You know, some of your regulars are going to sit for the rest, and then you come back with them the next week. It's a luxury the Bills did not enjoy a year ago when they had to stressfully win in Miami to win the division, and they did not have the luxury of resting players for that game. They had big injuries, and it really cost them more the next week against the Steelers, and then obviously they were shorthanded, especially on defense for Kansas City. Sal Capaccio was privy to McDermott's comments. We'll talk about what he said. Also, yesterday's game, the advantage, whatever it's worth, to have this, you know, opportunity here where you can sit Josh Allen and other players, and the Broncos and more. MVP, so much to talk about this time of year. Bulldog takes the week off, week and a half, as it turns out here. I don't mind. At least it's, you know, there's a lot of content. Not as much as there could have been, like I said about the Ram thing, you know, but it'd been a little bit more interesting if there was a piece here that we don't have, but there really isn't. Trying to avoid a team, you know, there's nothing. Sal Capaccio, I just said at the same time how much there is to talk about, but there's really nothing here to figure out here for this game Sunday. Anyway, it's Football Monday. I'm Mike Shope. Sal joins me next here on WGR.